Saving money on protecting your garden. Now at Menards. Messina's Animal Stopper is a liquid repellent that prevents pesky animals from damaging your garden. Available in a convenient, ready-to-use bottle. It lasts for up to 30 days, regardless of weather and watering. Save big money on Messina's Animal Stopper at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome back to another episode here of the Musings on Madison podcast. Maybe by week three or four, we'll figure this out. Welcome to Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Dave Melton, assistant editor here at Second City Hockey. An incredibly dejected and disappointed person tonight just because I happened to watch the Blackhawks game this evening. And with me are two people who are probably feeling the same way. First off, it is the recently hired NHL.com correspondent for the Blackhawks, something of that nature. I don't know, but he's covering Blackhawks game now. He's all fancy. It's Brandon Kane.
Thanks, Dave.
Congrats, sir.
I'm still around here.
Yeah. We still bring you around these parts, but now you've got inside information for us, right?
I guess we'll find out in the coming pods, I guess.
And by inside information, we're going to talk about the food that they serve the media at the in the press room.
That's what everyone really cares about.
Yeah, because that's like, Shepard, I don't know if you cover, if you've ever done any.
I cover the Wolves when I'm in Chicago.
Okay, there you go. So I've seen the press spread at food that they offer in the media room at a Wolves game. It's pretty nice.
They're really good about that.
I feel like some people who have not worked in the media may not understand, like if you work your way up starting, like I cover a ton of high school and small college stuff where there's usually nothing at all. If it is, it's like, you know, cold pizza. So when you get up to the bigger college and the pro levels and you get like a 5-course meal waiting for you when you're working all day, I'm like, that's a pretty nice upgrade. So Brandon, we expect full reports on whatever it is that they're feeding you guys on game days.
I will happily oblige.
Excellent. And then also with us tonight is the analytics darling of Second City Hockey, Shepard Price.
Hello. I'm probably going to be more optimistic on this podcast. I'm going to find ways to do that.
Good luck with that.
We'll see how this goes.
Let's see if we can kill that optimism real quick.
Hey, look, the box score.
Hey, Adam Boquist got a point. Yeah.
Yeah, he got his first ever NHL assist.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So there's that.
I hope they saved the puck for him. Our initial plan for this was to record it during the third period of the Hawks Golden Knights game, but I think that might have been torture for the three of us everybody. And for everybody listening to have us talk about what was going on during that game. But we're coming to you just minutes after the Blackhawks lost 5-1 to the Vegas Golden Knights in a game that may not have even been that close. Like 5-1's a pretty sizable margin of victory in the NHL, but I think it could have been 7, 8, 9-1 if Corey Crawford didn't stand on his head, which I feel like it's a broken record where we say the Hawks lost by 2, 3, 4 goals, and it could have been even worse if the goalie hadn't stood on his head. So that's the kind of season it's been. And I don't think we have to tell too many of our listeners that if they've been watching the Hawks games this year. It's just not good. And the point that we were discussing before and I want to reference now is Calvin DeHaan got hurt tonight, and we're fingers crossed that it's not anything significant because it sounded like it was a right shoulder injury, which is the same shoulder that was surgically repaired in the offseason. So obviously that raises a major red flag. You hope it's nothing serious. But there's two things that can be true here is that Calvin DeHaan's injury certainly did not help the Blackhawks tonight, but they've been pretty bad with Calvin DeHaan in the lineup anyway, so you can't really use that as an excuse. So, Shepard, what the hell's going on? Just something. Just talk.
So, I don't blame Calvin DeHaan for the losses that have happened while he's in the lineup because he's one of the very, very few significantly small number of Blackhawks defenders who are capable of doing their job. It's him, it's Connor Murphy, and it's Duncan Keith, and now two of those guys are hurt.
Oh,
even Duncan Keith is past his prime pretty firmly. So Connor Murphy had to do almost all the heavy lifting, considering that the other four guys were Brett Seabrook, Erik Gustafsson, Dennis Gilbert, and Adam Boqvist. I honestly think the Blackhawks would have been better off if Connor Murphy played all 60 minutes or all 50 minutes after Calvin DeHaan was injured.
Like they had that stretch in the first period when Boqvist was out and DeHaan got hurt. Boqvist came back, but they had four defensemen for a while, and then Gilbert took a penalty, so they were down to three defensemen. I think for a penalty kill in that game,
Boqvist was back by then.
Oh, Boqvist was back.
That doesn't necessarily help because when has Adam Boqvist ever had to kill a penalty? That's not what he does.
Yeah, maybe in juniors, maybe.
Maybe in Mites hockey as a 3-year-old.
Yeah, it was good. At some point I thought maybe the Blackhawks should just take a shift with four forwards to give their defensemen a rest. Not
exactly.
It would have made much of a difference.
It might have with good defensive forwards like David Kampf and Dylan Sakura and Brandon Saad, why not just shift to a different model at that point? Just start playing four forwards. There's models that suggest playing four forwards might be a better idea anyway.
Yeah, I'm here for it. You might as well do something different because what we've been watching for the last 2 months hasn't been any good. Brandon Kane, what about you? What are your thoughts on whatever the hell it was that we witnessed this evening?
I mean, do people expect something different than what that was? Huh. I mean, against one of the better teams. I know they were coming off a 5-0 loss to the New York Rangers of all teams, but
they redeemed that.
I don't think you ever go into a game expecting disaster. And again, this goes back to what's become our measuring stick for the Blackhawks this season is whether or not the game is a disaster. And no matter, I guess I expected the game last Thursday against Boston to be a disaster, and then they won in overtime. Still blew a 3-goal lead, but
I think the thing is just go into a game without any expectations and just let the good times or bad times roll. You have to guard your broken and shattered Chicago sports heart.
That's the saddest sentence I think I've ever heard on a podcast.
And we're talking about the hockey team at the United Center, not the basketball team.
Oh, well, I mean,
we're in the final month of 2019. Think about if you're not a Cubs fan, the decade of sports that Chicago fans have had, if they're White Sox fans.
It's just not good. Like the White Sox have been pretty garbage the whole decade.
The women's teams though.
Teams are the lone exception here.
Well, yeah, until they get to the final.
Let's not bring that up.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's been from a citywide perspective, it's actually been a pretty good decade. You have three Hawks Cups, the Cubs won a World Series. The Bears did.
Okay, sorry. The second half of the Blackhawks.
The second half of the decade has been a goddamn nightmare. So, yeah. Okay, fair enough.
I forgot that the Blackhawks Cups were this decade. It's been so long.
I know, right? Remember, this team used to win Stanley Cups a lot. Like, they won 3 in 6 years. They're by far the best team of the decade. Hey, we got a fresh update because we're doing this. We always do them live, but I guess we're doing this in the aftermath of a Hawks game so we can get some updates fresh off the Twitter machine. Chris Cook says that Calvin DeHaan's right shoulder injury is, quote, not good, and he's flying back to Chicago for evaluation. So he's
and there and the Blackhawks are still on a road trip, by the way.
Yeah, so they have two more road games.
Philip Holm, come on down.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Hammer McCaution.
Did the McCaution even play? They called him up.
I think they called him up and then immediately sent him back down.
Yeah, I don't remember him playing, but maybe he'll come back up. Philip Holm was another name I saw several times. Somebody's got to come up because they're down another defenseman. It sounds like he's headed for injured reserve, if not long-term injured reserve. The last time somebody in Chicago said an injury was not good, it was a torn pectoral muscle. So, whew.
I don't want to see Slater Cuckoo play hockey anymore.
I could say that about several guys on the Blackhawks right now, unfortunately. It's just been that kind of season. But again, I think it goes back to the point we were talking about at the top of the show where these injuries aren't helping, but they weren't a good team beforehand. So I guess, like, how do you even, and either one of you guys want to respond to this, feel free. How do you even analyze the talent on your team when the team is so just looks broken that nothing's going to work anyway? Like, how do you properly evaluate guys like Boqvist, Nylander, and all the other youngsters when everything just kind of sucks about this team?
So I think you can put them into context with other rookies on bad teams. See how Kirby Dach is doing in relation to Kaapo Kakko and Jack Hughes, neither of whom are on a good team this year. See how Adam Boqvist is doing, not in relation to Quentin Hughes or Kale McCarr, for instance, but who's a defenseman on a bad team that's a rookie? It's hard to name them because bad teams don't usually carry rookies, but they keep them in context. And then I think that Kirby Dach's doing really well in comparison to his rookie class who are on bad teams. I think that's a good sign. And then for other players, just I'm a big fan of possession metrics. Keep relative possession metrics in mind. Brandon Saad's doing better relative to the team. Brandon Saad's doing well.
You are the analytics darling of Second City Hockey.
Yeah. Brandon Saad's doing well because he's doing well in relation to the team. I think that's a fairly easy thing to say.
And it's like there's some encouraging signs, but I cannot shake this feeling with this team that this whole thing is just broken right now. And it feels like, to make another cross-sports comparison, which we love to do on this podcast, it reminds me of like the Mark Trussman era Bears where but you can bring in, you know, ship out this broken piece for this new piece, and the new piece you bring in is going to get broken by the system. So, or just broken by the way things are right now. I don't feel good about anything involving this team at the moment. Like even when healthy, the team is maybe a fringe wild card team at best. When with all these guys getting injured, we're heading to the lottery pretty quickly. And you've got, you know, all these veterans on no movement clauses. I mean,
bottom out, you've got to hope that the veterans waive those clauses, I think.
I feel like we were talking about this before we hit the record button here, but we're getting closer and closer to that episode of where do they trade Kane? When do they trade Taves? What do they get for him? What's the reasonable expectations? I'm not there yet. I'd like to reiterate that. I'm not there yet. But every time something happens, like every time a game like this happens, I feel like I'm a step closer to just conceding that they need to blow up the entire thing. And I saw the tweet from Mark Lazarus tonight about, you have four veterans and you can't blow it up, but maybe blowing it up just involves firing the head coach and the general manager, and you see if that fixes something. And if that doesn't fix it, then you're talking about waiving no trade clauses and all of that. Brandon, what do you think about that?
A lot to take in.
yeah, I'm sorry.
Colleton said Sunday after the game when asked, how do you evaluate the team? He said, let me pull up the quote here that I have. He said, well, for now, that is what we are. We're inconsistent, and it's up to us to commit to doing the thing shift to shift that will allow us to turn into something more. Simple as that. Which is basically him saying, like, you can't evaluate this team because we are inconsistent. There is no rhyme or reason to, you know, the play that's being exhibited on the ice.
Isn't it the coach's responsibility to not have his team be inconsistent, though? Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
I think it's long past due that Jeremy Colliton's expiration date has been.
And you also have to, like, think there's, I don't know, the Mark Crawford situation is still ongoing with the investigation into.
Yeah, I keep forgetting about that.
Those things. So it's a matter of, like, when that investigation is concluded, you know, regardless of the outcome on it, I feel like they can't make a decision on Colliton's status until that investigation is done on Mark Crawford.
Right.
Because I mean, Sheldon Brookbank's going to be the head coach. That's what it looks like to go that route. I don't see them doing it, but
the
guy
that
would be the option.
The guy they could easily just talk to is also, again, in Chicago.
That's not happening mid-season.
Yeah.
But, like, why would you trust Sheldon Brookbank, who hasn't been a coach for a full 3 years yet?
You can just slap him with the interim tag just to get by. Like, I don't think
– put the Band-Aid on it.
Yeah. You have to have a head coach, and it's got to be somebody available. So unless they're going to – Scotty Bowman going to come out of retirement?
What they could do is they could bring Barry Smith and have him be the interim for the rest of the season if they were to go that route.
Yeah,
I don't see it happening, but that is an option.
I think if they fire Colliton midseason, I think it's either going to be Barry Smith or Sheldon Brookbank, and I think they're going to – an interim tag while they try and – get the big picture and
readjust.
Yeah, and readjust and figure out what the hell they're going to do, because if Colliton gets fired,
I think that's the season. I think that's just all right. It's time to go after Quentin Byfield and Alexis Lafreniere and see what you can get.
But the thing is, there's pieces there that to build on, and there's pieces that are coming, but this season has to bridge that gap, and it's not doing that.
Right, yeah. And I think a good idea if Colliton is fired is to bring Derek King up and have him coach some of the younger guys and just start recalling them in batches and see how they do.
But then who's going to coach Rockford then? You don't have
Anders Sorensen.
Oh, okay. But
I don't think they bring up King because he's doing much better than I would have projected at the start with the, you know, gluttony of call-ups and stuff and, like, managing his lineup, aside from tonight's defensive effort, but, you know, that withstanding, he's doing a good job of juggling lines and optimizing lineups and shuffling things around when he's needed to. So I feel like that works for them. So if you, as an organization, want a bright spot, hey, at least our farm system is doing well.
Well, that's something.
Hey, something is better than nothing, right? And this is I mean, at the end of the day, it's a business. You're trying to, you know, make money out of this. And if that's where you can sustain money throughout, you know, March, April, maybe May, then it's not the worst thing in the world.
But what if they're good either. What if they're content making money, and making money doesn't necessarily involve winning?
I think at some point it has to, considering the expectations that Chicago fans have on this team.
Yeah, I mean, I assume
those
expectations aren't
going away.
Yeah, yeah, but them seats are still pretty full. I mean, they're not looking as empty. They're not as full as they were 5 years ago, but they're also not as empty as the United Center was for that Bulls game the other night. There's that picture going around on Twitter from a couple nights ago where you could probably count the people sitting in the 300 level. And I don't think the
Hawks was like 13 or 14,000. Yeah, it was not good.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the first time the sellout streak is snapped, I think the Blackhawks will start to panic as an organization.
I would already be in a panic spot because it just – like the the gap between where they are now and where they want to be, it seems like it keeps getting wider, and your top veteran players are supposed to help bridge that gap. And I don't know if they're going to be there at the end of it anymore. I think when we gets back into some of the bigger picture stuff we've been talking about before. So I don't know.
And they play 7 games the rest of December against Western Conference opponents, at Arizona, at St. Louis. Then they have Minnesota at home on Sunday, a Wednesday tilt against the Avs, at Winnipeg. That is back to back. Then the 21st, they head out to Denver. And they've got 3 against Eastern opponents, and then New Year's Eve in Calgary. Tough stretch, to say the least.
So, yeah, with that busy schedule that they have coming up, like, I was trying to look for a gap. Usually there's, you know, if you're going to make a coaching change, you try and do it when there's a couple days off. So they're not going to do it over – well, I feel like they did – the Hawks did fire a coach right around Christmas once. I think this was – in the early 2000s. I'll have to Google this later. But anyway, like, they play on the fifth, the game against the Wild. They have 2 days off before that Avalanche game. So that seems like maybe you can make a move there. Then there's the 3 days off for Christmas. That'd be a cold, cold thing to do, but I, you know, it's pro sports. Sometimes these things happen. And then the other spot was, you know, Thursday, January 2nd, first game of the new year, new decade even, will be on a Thursday night in Vancouver. Then you have 2 games off, 2 days off, and they play at home to Detroit. So maybe there, if you're going to make a coaching change, maybe that's where it happens. But and then after that, it'd be like maybe that bye week they have for All-Star Week when they have a week and a half off at the end of January. But I don't know if Colleton's going to last that long if they keep playing like this. Yeah, I don't know. Any other thoughts on the coaching change there, gentlemen?
I would have thought it would have happened already. But they, if they keep bouncing around 500, then
yeah,
I can see them extending it.
They pull another 3-game winning streak out of their ass. Like, they won, they you know, they beat Boston in overtime, and they had a 2-0-1 stretch, and three games in 4 days, they got 5 or 6 points, and I don't think I've ever been less encouraged. Like, the first game they blew a 3-goal lead. Then they needed a shootout to beat the frickin' Devils, and then they lost in a shootout to Arizona. It's like, did anything about that game make you feel good? I got nothing out of any of those wins.
Except the shock of
beating Boston.
One good thing, again, I'm trying to be optimistic.
Thank
Dominic
you.
Dominic Kubalik is clearly a first line winger. I think he's up there with.
Absolutely.
Saad, our best forwards so far this season. He's up there with Saad and Kampf.
I
think he's having a good start.
The top line needs to be Taves, Saad, and Kubalik for the foreseeable future, and I see no reason why that should change.
Unless it's bold take, changing the center and just going with the line that's worked the best across the whole season and making them the first line and going Saad, Kampf, Kubalik again and giving them more time on ice.
You don't want David Kampf getting your most minutes out of
centers? against the best opponents, while Taves gets probably play with Doc and Nylander.
So making that like your top shutdown line, essentially.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I got you there. I could see that. I could entertain that line. That'd be a good line.
A top shutdown line that can also still drive offense.
Yeah, it could, like, so like the Dave Bolin lines from 2010 and 2013, essentially.
Except a little bit more offensively capable.
Well, I think, like, I guess more the 2010 version when it was Bolin, Ladd, and Versteeg, because that line could still produce offensively while also shutting down opposing attackers. They owned the Sedin twins for 2 or 3 years. It was great. Good times. So much fun. We had so much fun back then. We were so young. Yeah. Anyway.
Those were the days.
Those were the days, man.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check.
So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to cars.com. It's magical.
So coming back to the present, which is much, much less fun than it should be. Not as fun as it should be is what I'm trying to say. English is hard. Anyway, so what we're trying to go with this is, you know, you have your third straight season where it looks like the Blackhawks are probably going to miss the playoffs. At what point do the guys like Taves and Kane and Keith decide, I don't want to be spending the rest of my career on a franchise that's playing for the lottery every year? Not that they're going to, like, it's not getting into the discussion about blowing things up. It's more about, do you guys see these guys just getting sick of losing, potentially asking for a change of scenery? Because it seems like after you had so much time winning earlier in your careers, I don't know how content they're going to be riding off into the sunset of their careers, getting their faces kicked in every night.
Yeah, I think this is where the clear dividing line comes in, is that the three guys who are going to get a statue outside of the United Center right next to Michael Jordan are Jonathan Taves, Patrick Kane, and Duncan Keith. And I don't know if any of them, if this continues, need to end their careers and be lifetime Blackhawks. I don't know if that's something that will need to happen.
And it seems like such a bizarre thought, because, you know, all three of those guys are wearing letters every night they play. Well, our Kane's been wearing the A in Keith's absence, but I just, and again, I don't know these guys personally, so I have no idea what's going on in their heads, but you can see, like, you can see the frustration out of them boiling over a little more than I have at any other point in your careers. Like, seeing Kane go palms up on so many more offensive situations that don't pan out this year. There was a clip going around of Taves not looking like he was entirely receptive to a very brief conversation with Colleton on the bench near the end of the Arizona game a week ago. So there's little things that suggest maybe there's some frustration brewing with the more veteran players on this team. And Brandon, do you think anything comes of that building frustration out of that group?
I don't know yet. It seems like there certainly could be. And there's a lot that, I don't know, it's hard to understand like what this team is based on all the influx of moves in that, because you have guys that are in and out of the lineup and they have chemistry with certain players, but then, you know, they don't have guys in and out of the lineup. And I listened to the Blackhawks Talk podcast, and Nick Gismondi made the comparison of, it's like when you go to, you know, a family Thanksgiving or something, and the aunts and uncles and your first cousins couldn't come, and all of a sudden it's your second cousins and they're like friends are at the table, and you're like, well, how do I have a conversation with them? Like, I don't know who you are.
Right.
And
right.
It, like, I don't know why, but that analogy like really stuck with me. And I was like, that is really good, because, and he equated it to like stuff off the ice as well. But just from like an on ice perspective, I'm like, that makes a lot of sense, because these guys have, at least, you know, in the Blackhawks organization, they've known each other for so long. And you develop these habits and these certain tells or ticks or whatever you want to call them, where you know where someone's going to be when this certain situation presents itself. And maybe that's what you expect, and then that guy isn't there and you're turning the puck over. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the one thing that, I mean, they've all had to adapt to an entirely new group of teammates. I mean, the roster that won any of their Stanley Cups, is it's turned over so much. I mean, they've had a ton of turnover just in the last 2 or 3 years, mainly because when you don't have a good team, the players don't stay. Players get traded, players get released, what have you. And thank you, Brandon, for finding it was Trent Yanni they fired just before Thanksgiving in 2006, which we all remember vividly, I'm sure, the Trent Yanni era with the Blackhawks. So who replaced him? Would that have been Savard?
That would have been Savard.
Yep.
Okay.
Carve up that 10-year as a big old L.
Although there was someone, I think it was Duncan Keith, said that playing under Trent Yanni for the first few years of his career was the best thing for him. So there's that. I remember Trent Yanni playing with him in like NHL 99, because he was a defenseman And that's going to end the Trent and Yanni segment on this podcast.
Moving on.
But speaking of veterans that are going to be frustrated, the other two guys that I think if they were assaulted one of their teammates after a game, I don't think any jury would convict them is Robin Leonard and Corey Crawford are getting so many shots against them. And just they're having to hold the fort virtually alone every single night. And I think against the Vegas game tonight, I think you really saw the most animated frustrations I've seen out of Corey Crawford in years, where at the end of, I think it was the second period, the camera showed the players walking down the tunnel into the locker room and looked like Crawford was trying to break a stick in half or angrily hitting something that he didn't, that he just trying to vent a little bit, just because that was right after Gustafson kind of blew the two-on-one defense where Zach Smith was damn near behind the net and Gustafson was still kind of let the passing lane be wide open, and Carlson had a net so open the three of us would have hit it for a goal. So at what point, Shepard, I'm going to ask you this one, at some point do the goalies have a breaking point as well, like some of the other veterans like Taves and Kane might?
Oh, definitely. Especially somebody like Robin Leonard, who's not been afraid to be animated and who's been brutally honest so far in his brief Blackhawks tenure so far, is that he's going to throw a fit at some point. And I would not be surprised if he pulls a Patrick Waugh and says, either you fire him or I'm going. I need to go. There's a reason I think he doesn't have an NMC, despite how good his contract is. And I think that might be what gets Jeremy Collison fired. And if that's the case, Robin, can you do that like tonight? Because I think Stan is still smart. I think Stan still is the guy who built two cup winning franchises after winning the first one and cup winning teams. And I think that he understands that, yeah, it's probably Collison who needs to go and not the guy who's one of the best goaltenders in the league so far.
Yeah, and I mean, and if they're going to do this rebuild or rebuild on the fly or reload or whatever the hell they want to call it, like
– it's not – it can't be any of those anymore.
Well, I don't know. Whatever the hell it is they're trying to do, it seems like Robin Leonard is very much in his prime. So if they think they're going to try and win something in the short term within like the next like 2 or 3 years, I'm saying, Robin Leonard is the perfect guy to re-sign at the end of the season and let him be the number one goalie. If they're not going to do that, which is a podcast we'll do later in the season if things keep going this way, he could fetch one hell of a haul at the trade deadline. But we'll worry about that in 2020 because I think we'll have much bigger fish to fry between now and then, unfortunately. So, yeah, I'm sitting here looking at the Hawks schedule. I don't know if you're going to fire a coach in the middle of the road trip. It's not like – I think I just want something to happen. Trade somebody, fire somebody, just do something. It's so boring.
And the Mark Crawford.
It's just fire
investigation. Fire him and then bring up somebody.
Just let him go. And that doesn't count as the move that needs to happen.
Right.
Crawford got himself fired for all the other shit he did earlier in his career. Brandon, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was just saying the actions that Crawford did in Vegas looked more intentional and directed in, like, anger and frustration than what Leonard did in Colorado when he was pulled, because it looked like Leonard was just like, hey, wake up, like, we can do this. Like, it seemed more like constructive,
maybe encouraging than
and that like started like this whole firestorm, it seemed like. And Leonard was like, that's not what I like. It wasn't like yelling at my teammates because they were like leaving me out to dry out there. He's like, I was just like, hey, like, we weren't doing good, so I wanted to, like, get the guys going a little bit.
Yeah, I think there was some –
it seemed a little bit different from Crawford tonight. And not, like, he was, like, berating his teammates, but he was just, like, completely frustrated because he just didn't, like, know how to react, because that hasn't happened in so long for him.
Because there's no help. He's got no help. I think the Leonard thing was – I think the reason some people made a big deal about it is because – he was shouting down the bench, but he just happened to be standing directly next to Taves when he did that. So if you took a quick glance at it, it looked like he was yelling at Taves, but I think it's more like what you were saying, Brandon. He was just yelling down the bench, just trying to rally the troops, saying, hey, you know, get your heads out of your asses. Let's play some actual hockey, or as much as we can this season.
Yeah, but you can't fault either one of them from being frustrated or that, because it's like you see what's going on and you're like, they are performing and they just want the guys in front of them to, because that's going to help, you know, the overall team success.
Yeah, if either Crawford or Leonard went to the media after any of the games of the season and said, I'm doing my job, I wish someone – they could throw their entire team under the bus, and I think I would just – yeah, they're right. Like, they'd be totally justified. Now, they're probably not going to do that just because – well, Leonard might. Crawford probably never will, just because that's not the way he is, and hockey culture and whatnot. But, like, if one of them happened to do it, I don't think anyone here is going to blame them.
Yeah, and Leonard on Sunday was, you know, we asked about, like, you know, the team's taking so many penalties, and asked, like, how much, you know, is that hurting the team? And he goes, well, yeah. He's like, we have to stop taking penalties. He's like, that's going to make things easier for us offensively and on defense. Like,
yeah,
clearly he's going to face fewer shots if they're playing a 5-on-5 rather than being down a man.
Yeah.
So obviously, like, he's going to love that. And I know a lot's been made that he's a top PK goalie in the league, but after, you know, you see so many shots, it's going to wear on you regardless if you have a tandem like the Blackhawks have.
Yeah, I'm interested to see when it stops going, when the quote changes from we need to be better from goes from we need to be better to they need to be better, they being the rest of his teammates. Maybe it won't get there. Maybe they'll somehow –
right the ship a little.
Yeah, I don't know. They are much better teammates than I would be at this point, because I can't – maybe that's why I'm not in the NHL, that and a general lack of athletic ability. But
both of them have preached the desire to have volume against them, right? So this is their volume against them.
Yeah, but I think at some point you just – you know, volume is one thing, but when players are getting empty nets to tap into, like the Carlson goal tonight. I think it was Carlson, the shorthanded goal on the 2-on-1. What can you do on that as goalie? I think goalies just want to be able to have the ability to have an opportunity to make the save, and they're not even getting the opportunity. And I think that seems like that would be the most frustrating thing for a goalie, when you don't even have the chance to do something because your teammates' end zone coverage is so pathetic.
Their crease defense this season has been atrocious from all the Blackhawks defenders.
Just it's all bad right now. It's really like, I mean, Shepherd offered some brief reasons for optimism, but I don't know. I think we entered the season, like, again, I didn't have them making the playoffs. Brandon, I don't think, had them making the playoffs. So It's not entirely disappointing to see them struggle. It's just the way they're getting outclassed so often. It is, and it's just, it's getting painful to watch. It's getting boring, and it's turning from disappointment into apathy, which is the worst place to be as a sports fan, I think, is when you can't even muster the energy to be mad about it anymore. And I feel like I'm pretty much there with this team at this point.
In general, I feel like there is one, like, overarching optimistic thing about where the Blackhawks are, is that Blackhawks fans really appreciate goaltending now. It seemed like for like the first half of the decade, it'd be like, oh, like, he should have made that save, like, that's terrible. And now it's like, oh, like, good goaltending, that's awesome. Like,
yeah,
I really dig that. Like, oh, that was a sick save. Like, so that's kind of cool to see, because like, goaltending is such like a weird position.
Yeah,
you're so like, who the hell is going to be like, oh yeah, let's strap on some pads and get pucks flown at me, like 90 miles per hour. Like, you're insane. Like, let's
was it goals. Was it Corey or Leonard who said, like, it's the guys in front of me who are crazy blocking shots without the padding?
I think I feel like that was Leonard. It was just like, at least I'm protected. Like,
yeah,
like, yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, but my face is behind a cage.
Right. So yeah, you have like Crawford, Leonard, and then in the AHL with that trio there. So it's like, hey, like, parts of the organization aren't great, but to see a position that normally just is like, oh, well, look, they gave up four goals. It's all the goalie's fault. It's like, no, when you look at it and you're like, okay, well, maybe only two of them were on the goalie. So,
yeah,
I don't know. It's just some like shift that I've seen within the fan base that's kind of nice to see when you like shuffle through all like the hate.
It's really nice having three NHL level goaltenders with Lankinen being the third.
Yeah. Well, we got the goaltending position figured out. Now they just have to get to the 18 skaters in front of them.
Well, subtract.
I know they're not all 18 bad, but it's just 12. Let me have my self-pitying moment, Shepard.
I'm still trying to have some optimism that there is something to build around.
Bless your heart. It's the holiday season. We're all trying to feel good about this. But
we got to record a pod on Festivus to like actually like hit it home on the nose, right?
And we've got plenty of grievances to be aired.
I feel like the people need it.
You know what? Maybe we'll open that up to the Second City Hockey listeners and let them air their own grievances, because I'm sure there's plenty to be had at this point.
We could open up like a hotline and everything.
A mailbag episode.
Oh boy, that'd be spicy. That'd be spicy like a Popeye's chicken sandwich.
You are obsessed with those.
You did. I saw you talking about wanting to get that into a Second City Hockey story, so I guess the podcast is good enough.
Yep, that was the reason I said that. There will be a story
on Second City Hockey about this podcast. So.
Bingo.
There you go. Good. Well done. Do you go the spicy or do you go the regular?
I'm an equal opportunity Popeye's chicken sandwich eater.
So you get one of each?
I mean, maybe I get two of each.
Oh, all right. Well, hey. You don't
eat all of them in one sitting. You know, you save one for the next day on lunch.
Yeah.
All right, Shepard, what about you? Spicy or regular?
Spicy.
Yeah, see, I'm the only regular guy, I guess, because I'm boring.
I like flavor.
There's plenty of flavor in a regular chicken sandwich.
No, spicy adds more flavor.
Next time you're back in the Chicago area from Austin, I will slap the taste out of your mouth just for that.
First time we meet.
That sounded good. I hope it sounds as good in the microphone. Anyway, but I have to credit the I'm Fat podcast with pointing out the Culver's chicken sandwich, which I tried recently.
Oh, it is a delight.
Oh, it's very good.
I'm a normie.
Hmm?
I said I'm a normie too.
Yeah. You run all the time. Yeah. That Culver's chicken sandwich, highly recommend. Do you see what the Blackhawks have done to us? We're talking about chicken sandwiches at the end of a hockey.
I mean, what else is there to talk about?
I mean, the chicken sandwich kind of looks like a hockey puck, like in fairness.
Yeah. Well, if you burn it long enough, it turns into a hockey puck.
There we go.
Well, you know what? I think that's going to be the perfect place to put a bow on this edition of the Musings on Madison podcast here on the Second City Hockey Network. So thank you very much for listening. We hope we're at least entertaining, at least more entertaining than some of the Blackhawks games have been recently. He's Shepard Price on Twitter. Follow him at Shepard Price. Brandon Kane is at Brendan M. Kane. I'm your host, Dave Melton. I am at _DaveMelton. Visit secondcityhockey.com. We'll have content up there every day talking about all the things going on with the Blackhawks. Hopefully we'll have something more interesting to write about in the upcoming days and weeks and months. And I think that'll any final thoughts, gentlemen?
Nothing.
Shepard?
Try to be optimistic. It's the holidays.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Every time we do the full doom and gloom, they win three in a row. So we'll talk to you next week when the Hawks have won three in a row. But thanks again for listening, and we will talk to you next time. And yeah, I guess we'll do it again. Just please, for the love of God, go. Da 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 da